Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Going Old School Show live on blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, June 7th of the year 2023. John Crow, Joe Ferrin, and yours truly, Johnny Sunships, here for the next 45 minutes. We'll bring in Mark Fortney, LeRon, the basketball insider, to talk about Game 3 tonight from Miami. And we will also talk with Ryan DiResta, as we'll talk to Stanley Cup Finals. That series resumes tomorrow night. But it's getting to football season, OTAs, all the camps are opening up. Patriots are going strong, but we figured we'd bring in our friend Jarvis Green, former New England Patriots defensive lineman and two-time champion. Jarvis Green joined us on our hotline. Jarvis, how you doing today, man? Joe,
hey,
and myself, thanks for your time, brother.
Hey, guys, how y'all doing? Yeah, definitely, I appreciate the time to come on to get the season going, but everything is going great on my side of the world.
Good stuff, man. Jarvis, we're going to talk about some of your political stuff and your foundations and what you're doing entrepreneur-wise, but I did come across something on your social media. I know you're in Tacoma, Washington later on this month at Pacific Lutheran University, but here, close to home at the University of Massachusetts in Lowell, on July 15th to the 17th, you and former Patriot Max Lane are going to have your Lineman Academy. That's kind of interesting, kind of struck me funny. I'm on the brochure right now, but tell us about it. What you expect here, and how you became involved in such a thing?
Well, it's Sports International, and they do a lot of camps around the country. I think they do football, basketball, and I think it's baseball as well. But I know for sure with football. So this is my fifth year in Lowell, Mass, and I'm going to be sharing the stage with Max Lane. A few years ago, before COVID, we had a camp, and I remember. I remember Max and I at the end. Everybody wanted to go a one-on-one duel, and I say, Max, let's go half speed. And I got to say, man, he was going full speed out there. And I'm like, bro, like chill out, bro. You know, we're not trying to make any football club here. You know, we're a lot older, and it's a great camp. You know, so the one for Pacific Lutheran, that's my first camp in Seattle. It's with Marcus Tufan as well the same week. And I think they had a D lineman that couldn't make it, so they asked me if I wanted to do it. And I was like, yeah, I would love to get on a flight to go hang out with some kids in Seattle on the East Coast. I'm sorry, on the West Coast. Now, the camp in Lowell, Mass, for my lineman camp, you know, we average around 70 to 80 kids. A lot of the kids stay on camp. They stay on campus, you know, through the night. And it's a great opportunity. It's a long day for the 3 days or 2.5 days. We have 3 days, the first 2 days and the last day. I think we have like a two-a-day or one-a-day. But great camp, a lot of skills, techniques, back to the basics, hands, pads, movements. It's a fun time, a lot of competition.
Now, Jarvis, obviously the kids are learning all about, you know, the great things to do football-wise to make things successful. But how important is it to kind of get in that environment, that next step level with a successful NFL Super Bowl champion like yourself? And others.
I think we lost Jarvis. Yeah, Jarvis, we lost. Okay, well, so we're going to wait.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are. Okay, Jarvis. Did you hear JC? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Hey, Jarvis.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, I'm here. So I think what the camp is really good because, you know, it's like the kids are so young, but then you got the kids getting close to their, you know, senior years, or they about to go to college and looking for different schools. And it's a lot of, you know, 1AA, a lot of NAIA schools, Division II, Division III school players. But at the end of the day, I tell these kids, technique, I don't care what level you're on, what division you're playing in, or who's in front of you. At the end of the day, it's about hands, hat, you know, placement, foot. But, you know, technique, mm-hmm. technique. And it's very, let me say this, it's redundant on what we do each day, but mm-hmm. that's the name of the game. That's sports. It's about repeating the same thing and trying to have perfection every time you do it. Now, we know no such thing as perfection, but you keep working hard at it, you're going to get better at it. And the kids have great, you know, great attitude. And at the same time, you have the parents out there too. So the parents out there are supporting. I'm always in conversation with the parents. I'm taking pictures with the kids. At the end of the camp, we sign autographs. And it's a great time for me just to get away for 2 or 3 days just to share my free time and also to share my skill set on what I learned playing from the Patriots.
Jarvis, how are you today? So
I'm good,
Joe. My question to you is, do you get a lot of high school coaches and college coaches volunteering with you guys in that camp, and how are they to work with high school coaches and college coaches?
Yeah, we do. So we have Norwich University, and we have a lot of other universities up in the area. That's the coaches that's representing. And, I mean, again, it's great to catch up with these guys. And a lot of guys at the same time, they're out there, you know, recruiting as well to see who's going to be on their future rosters, man. So just to engage with them, talk about some of the old days when I played. They talk about their days when they played college football. It's a positive time, you know. It's summertime. I always tell the kids, y'all gonna be somewhere else, eating a box of Cheerios and eating, you know, bag of cookies and Oreos, and a lot of sweet juices. But they're out there, you're hydrated, and it's hot. That's never fun, but part of playing sports is a camaraderie. It's about going out there and giving your last, you know. So it's a great time, great opportunity. And I'm just glad that I could be a part of Sports International Football Academies.
Two-time Super Bowl champion with the New England Patriots, Jarvis Green, joined us on our Going Old School show. Chips Crow and Joe here for you. Jarvis, I'm looking at the academy overview. A couple of things that strike me, and it talks about, you know, 6 hours of instruction per day, roughly, and obviously it says the academy will include classroom time with in-depth analysis. Is that very reminiscent of how it was like when you're in camp, with the on-field stuff and classroom as well?
I mean, yeah. So when I played, you know, football's a little different. You know, it wasn't flag football the way it is now with training camp. So we did have 2-a-days. We did have a lot of in-classroom film breakdown. We do the same thing at the camp. And that's why I say it's not your everyday camp that, you know, going out there and, yeah, you running around bags and hitting some bags and jumping over bags, but it's not easy, you know, for this camp. But again, it's a skill position camp. It's down, you know, into the nitty-gritty with the hands, with the hats, moving around. I mean, you got one-on-ones, you got two-on-twos. Now the camp also is helmets and shoulder pads. You know, that some kids may have full pads on, but, I mean, it's a serious football camp. And, I mean, some kids, they get a little crazy. They may start tackling a few kids. But we got to tap them on the head and just say, "Hey, man, it's a non-contact camp. Hands and feet."
Jarvis, is there a camp that you remember going to and that kind of still, you know, sticks in your mind as, you know, that you went through before going to, you know, to LSU and then, you know, obviously to the NFL? But is there something that sticks out in your mind from those camp days?
I got to say, for me, it was so different. It could be like it was back during the prehistoric days because I only went to one football camp. And, I mean, and look, I was a five-star player coming out. And, I mean, I went to LSU football camp. That was it because, number one, my parents, we didn't have the money. My parents, it wasn't really a big concern. They just wanted us to be doing something every summer. And we always stayed busy somewhere every summer doing something. But, I mean, I went to one camp. So you see the kids now, kids are going 3 to 4 camps a year, 5 camps. It's like kids trying to break records here with the Guinness World Book of Records when it comes to the football camps. But then you got the camps that's the 7-on-7 camps. You got the lineman camps. You got the full-blown camps with every position. So it's so much now to the point it's more of a big business compared to when I played that it was – if you went to a camp where I'm from, you probably hear a few guys that went to a true camp at a college because we just couldn't afford the $400, $450 overnight camper fees.
Well, Jarvis, I know there's a lot of older kids, but, like, what's the youngest kid that usually at that camp? You know, anybody like 10, 11 or
– No, I'm not sure. I think it starts off like at, I'm not sure on the age to the grade, but I think it starts off like around eighth grade and up.
Seven, yeah.
Or seven, so y'all got me beat. Got me beat 1 year. So it's seven and up, but then I know when we're out there, we separate the groups because you got a huge size difference. Some kids didn't get the growth spurt, but you have a, you know, we separate the big guys to, you know, to keep the size relevant so we can have fair competition.
Jarvis, it also says that the athletes are separated by age, position, and skill level. Do you have any idea who determines the skill level of these athletes? Are they put to some sort of physical test beforehand?
Y'all got me asking some tough questions here right now. So I think the coaches, they do the evaluation. They got the guys. They know the players. And then when we go for warm-ups, you know what? I think they do a pre-assessment on all the kids and skill set. I think they do because I remember the first every time we start off, they're running around running drills. And then they have an idea of how the kids are grouped. But you can tell, too, man, by kids' skill set. Because when you put a kid, like when the kids start doing even like the calisthenics and warm-ups and coming off the ball, you can kind of see and tell by a kid's skill set level just from the eye, you know. I mean, but then when you start getting guys, you know, padded up and hitting each other or connecting, you know, making different basic moves, you still kind of have an idea on who's advanced compared to new in the football game.
Jarvis Green with us. Our school podcast on this Wednesday night. Footballcamps.com is where you can find it. Look up Lineman Academies in Massachusetts for more information. That camp July 15th to 17th coming up. Jarvis, I got to ask you about the NFL. And they're holding their OTAs and, you know, the mandatory and, you know, the mini camps and coming up. But to you, there's a lot being made about how important they are. Patriots got a couple taken away because of violations. But to you, how important was this time of year for you as a player?
Well, this time of year, it's June. So by that time, you would think, you know, you kind of healed up if you had a major surgery, a minor surgery, or you're going through rehab still trying to get back on the field. Also, you had guys coming in from other teams. You had the rookie mini camps. You had new faces every year. You had some faces that left. You had some big signings, free agency, off season. It was very important, man, because I can remember 1 year, and for us, it's amazing when you're playing the game because you don't really like. For me, I really wasn't a guy during the off season watching ESPN. And you know how technology is now. When you say something, it pops up on your phone or go across your screen, you know, yeah, with the third party sound recognition, text words, keywords, right? So when, so just for instance, when we played, I remember when Mike Vrabel came over, and I'm like, that's a funny looking dude with a nice haircut, hairy guy, right? And then you say, oh, who's that guy? That's Vrabel from Pittsburgh. But we know when Vrabel came to New England from Pittsburgh, he was more of a special teams guy, right? But then he became way more classier, you know, playing across, you know, the board. And he made so much, you know, he brought so much to the team. But then you got a guy like Roosevelt Colvin that came in, and I remember like we was working out, me, Seymour, it was Vince, it was Ty Warren. We're like, who's this guy? And I remember somebody say, oh, that's Roosevelt Colvin. We're like, Roosevelt Colvin, the outside linebacker from Chicago, with all the sacks, you know, so you hear these stories. And then of course for us, we were good camaraderie. So we made friends. It wasn't like we had beef when a new guy came in. We all approached him, shook hands, made friends. Hey, what's going on? So that was just our lifestyle and the way we perform and the way we act on and off the field. But this is a great time, you know, mini camp. You kind of see where you're at on the roster. You know, you want to go into the weight room and get your gains and just try to get better from the year before.
Jarvis, so I have a question for you. This year, you know, they've got more and more travel. You know, we're going to Frankfurt, Germany this year. They're going to London, Mexico. When you played, you guys didn't travel. What's your opinion on, would you like that or would you not like it if you had to travel while you were playing that kind of travel schedule?
Wait, Joe, you talking about New England or just like that's a different game for the NFL?
The NFL in general, because, I mean, you know, you got Frankfurt, Germany games this year. You've had Mexico games.
You know, they
played in London.
I played in London against Tampa. That was great experience.
Mm-hmm.
Tired as shit. Jet lag. Like, well, we did okay. Bill got us straight. But then I remember when I went to Denver, I was supposed to go back to London again, but then I got released. I'm like, this would have been great, 2-for-2, you know. And I think it's great because just the experience. We all know that NFL, the guys in the ivory tower, is trying to get more viewership. We know that because that's money, big TV contracts. I mean, you look at the way soccer is, right? It's ridiculous, and with the TV contracts, international stars. Because I think, too, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, America, we're only 5% of the world, right? 95% is outside of America. So you just can imagine the upside in the viewership and getting all the people to buy all of the gear, the clothes, the memorabilia. And it's a money swing, you know, but I think for the players – I would tell the players, man, take advantage of that foreign traveling, jet set, because that experience just to be in another country, I mean, it's priceless. And if you could do it, you know, on somebody else's dollar, and I think one day, I'm going to say this, before I left, I could always hear, you know, these stories across the board that the goal is one day is to have a league in the United, you know, in the European Union. That, not a league, but you could have a conference with four teams,
right,
or whatever it's going to be. And, you know, of course, they're going to get all the science put together on for us, who's going to be playing here, who's going to be playing there, or at the time difference, because, you know, you'd be jet-lagged all through the year if you didn't do it the right way. So I think somewhere in the future, it's going to be like the NFL of Europe, but it's going to bring back, you know, like on steroids,
mm-hmm.
no pun intended, but have a conference in the European Union with four teams coming back and forth to the States and vice versa with the teams.
Former Patriots defensive lineman Jarvis Granger. Jarvis, you kind of led me into that question because I was going to ask you how you would feel if you were like on a team and based in London and you had to play your home games there and flip off back in the States for the away games, but you made perfect sense. The only way to pull this off is to have a conference over there and you somehow meet in the playoffs like you would like an AFC and NFC conference, right? I mean, that's really the only way, because would you want to play just on a team based in London and have to bounce back and forth from home games?
I mean, you know what? For me, it'll be like hashtag jet setter, hashtag Gucci, Geechee, flying European jet setting, playing across seas. I'll be on social media heavy, man, promoting, you know, at the Big Eye, and, you know, the Big Ben hanging out in France the next week, you know, Germany the next week. But I think the guys would get acclimated to it. And you got to, come on, guys, the European Union is over 550 million people.
Yeah.
You know, so you add that with the United States at 330 million, whatever it is, and counting, and just add the numbers up with ESPN, NFL, and, of course, now you have a London NFL network commentated from somewhere in the U.K. probably. I don't know. It could be so much that could happen. But I think for guys, as long as they have the rest in between and it's calculated right, I think it would be a good thing for the NFL to have that league abroad, or have that conference or division abroad.
Mm-hmm. Jarvis, talk to me about the AFC East. We got Aaron Rodgers now, quarterback of the Jets. We got Madden cover boy Josh Allen taking the Bills back. Tua, hopefully healthy, in Miami. And we've got Mac Jones with the Patriots. What's your impression going in right now?
My impression is that's going to probably be the most watched conference this year. There's going to be a lot of going on. You got two of the top 10 quarterbacks actively playing right now. No, I'm going to say three of the top 15 quarterbacks, right? I don't know where Tua ranks at all. But you got some high-profiling guys right now in that conference. And then, look, people talk about Matt Jones. I pray that Coach Billy O'Brien brings Matt Jones to who he's supposed to be, because last year was a drop off, and we've been praying that he got better from year one, you know, because sky's the limit. But I think he's going to be okay with Billy O. Billy O knows what he's doing, and that was a great move for the organization to bring him back. But I know with Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, I can't wait to see what happens in New York with that market. And we know Aaron Rodgers, he's been on one team his entire career, but he is a legendary player. And those type of players, they're supposed to change the DNA for the entire team. So let's see what happens. I'm gonna say this. I will definitely be watching more AFC East football this year just to see what happens with those four guys, you know, at quarterback, and that's going to be a tough division like it always has been.
Jarvis, my final question to you is, your former quarterback who used to play with Tom Brady, do you think being a 1% owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, do you think he would even entice to play this year if possible?
Wait, what you just say? 1% of what?
He's a 1% owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. So do you think
who's talking about Brady?
Yeah, Tom is 1% owner of the Raiders. Yeah, he actually bought the Raiders.
That's right. That did happen. That's kind of weird.
You think he would entertain the thought of possibly playing this year?
I mean, he's probably in the wheelchair on vacation right now, right? They post pictures with him hanging with his kids and standing up. I mean, I don't see why Brady would come back after how many Super Bowls that he has. I mean, he's done his job. I think the rest of the league is praying that he keeps his mind set to stay retired.
Jarvis, final question
but
for me.
You never know. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I was saying, but you never know with Tom, right? You never know.
No kidding. Well, that's okay. I mean, it's amazing to think that he's at 45, 46, and we're still considering him coming back. But, Jarvis, final question for me, and I do want to talk about some of your entrepreneurship. You're still doing a lot. I follow you on Insta. You're still doing a lot with the Seeds Institute, Green Reef Foundation. Can you give us a status update, what you're doing? Kind of surmise it for you, because you never stop, man, and I admire your work ethic.
Thank you, man. I tell you, man, look, so the Green Reef Foundation, we have been making some moves. We've been moving around. I think in the last, not last week, I was off, but I had went on a 4 or 5 week run. We were in Montana for a week. We were in D.C. for a week. We were in Delaware for a few days. I was in South Carolina for about 3 or 4 days. And all of this has something to do with the foundation itself and working in emerging markets, but also working, you know, in empowerment of women, and really more about the seafood and just building up the silos that we have, right? So working with academia, working with government, working with private institutions and NGOs. We got some stuff that's going on now here. We're working with Southern University that we're going to start a big fundraiser. And the big thing about the fundraiser is now is that it's going to be more about getting scholarships, raising money for a cause, but getting more kids having, you know, opportunity to get more scholarships that we could bring more kids into college and get them, you know, on the books. And then also it's a stress as far as agriculture. And I always tell people, too, we say ag for the bag, to get the next generation into agriculture, because we need it, man, because right now we have an adversary that we're fighting against that's trying to take over the world, and we need to really just strengthen the things that we're doing at home as well. But then I'm also doing some stuff in Africa because I was there. I'm not sure the last time we talked, but I was in Africa back in October, November for about 3 weeks, and then I was doing some things like that. But also, you know, I've been working with the government and more with DOD, and some of this stuff is more like national security strategic competition. So it's been great, and I got to say, too, you know, going into the seafood business, I never thought I'd be at this point now working with the government, and it's for a great cause. You know, a lot of people say it's God's work, but it's taking it one day at a time.
Jarvis, you're making a difference, and for that, I'll forever be admirable of what you do. I truly mean that from the bottom of my heart. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion with the New England Patriots. And if you want to join his Sports International Football Camp, the Max Lean and Jarvis Green Lineman Academy, go on www.footballcamps.com. If you want to call them directly, please do, 301-575-6480. He'll be in Tacoma, Washington, Pacific Lutheran University, June 26th and 28th. There are still a couple of spots open for that. And close to here, to home, the University of Mass Lowell in Lowell, Mass, from July 15th to the 17th. It's almost full. So call there. Go on the site. If you're having trouble, Google Jarvis Green, and he'll come right up on it. And Jarvis, I can't tell you how much I appreciate, we appreciate the time you take to spend with us in your busy schedule, man. Look forward to talking some college football with you. We'll check in with you before the season starts, my friend.
All right, guys. I'll take it easy. Thank you all again. You have a great night.
You bet.
Thanks, Jarvis.
All right, guys.
And thank you, Jarvis. That's Jarvis Green. Always a good talk with Mr. Jarvis Green. And we welcome him, and we really appreciate his time on the Going Old School show. Doing a lot of good things, man. I don't know if you guys follow him on social, John and Joe, but he's all over the place. So he's just freaking fire miles like you could read about.
I follow him. I'm always following him. So the guy never stops. Never stops. The guy moving all the time. He's crazy.
Yeah. I didn't get him asked. JC, I wanted to ask him this question. I wanted to know if he's kind of – I don't know what kind of shape he's in. It was going to be delicate. I wanted to ask him what his workout regimen was. I'm sure he keeps in shape. But does he need to add some – does he feel the need to be added, you know, to add some physicality and be in better shape with the football camp just to kind of move around because you never know what the camp will bring? I love the story he said about getting those two to put their pads on.
Oh, no question. He can easily kick my ass right now. That's for sure.
Probably you and me both, man.
All three of us, you could run over us like a Mack truck.
That's right. Big boy. So that's Jarvis Green. And again, check him out on social. Follow him. He'll be on the show later on in the year. And he's always been a good friend of ours for like two or three years now. So we always thank Jarvis and we wish him the best. So check out his Max Lane and Jarvis Green Football Academy. Google it. You'll find everything you need right there. So a little later on in the show, Mark Fortney will join us to talk some NBA hoops with Game 3 tonight in Miami. And I can't wait to get his earful because I guess I had a couple things to say and we're online holding for the Stanley Cup Finals. And speaking of the Stanley Cup Finals, we're going to bring in right now our NHL insider. And he is Mr. Ryan DiResta. Ryan, how you doing today? John and Joe here. How you doing, buddy? Thanks for your time.
Thank you. How we doing, guys?
All good.
Hey, Ryan.
All right, Ryan. We chatted. But Vegas has a 2-0 series lead. I guess my first question to you is, how have they made it look so darn easy two games in with Game 3 looming tomorrow night?
Oh, well, I mean, I guess you could – I mean, I would relate a lot of this to the rest that Florida got compared to Vegas. I mean, Vegas only had a couple days off compared to Florida, who had just about 9 full days not touching the ice in a game capacity, whereas Vegas just played about 4 or 5 days before, a little bit fresher. Definitely had a little bit more of a struggle in their series against Dallas, but all in all – They've come out on top, and they're just looking way bigger than Florida right now.
Ryan, as you know, especially when you get to the finals, series starts in Game 3. Doesn't really start until, you know, someone loses a home game. But how much can the Panthers go back to Series 1 against the Bruins, being down 3-1 and never giving up and just playing to their skill and playing, you know, believing in the system? How much can they rely on that getting back home for Game 3 tomorrow night?
I think that's going to be a huge part. They're going to have to find their game. Unfortunately, I think it's a different situation here. Against that series in Boston, you had a bunch of their top line guys out. Bergeron out for an extended amount of time. Then Krejci was out. Lots of shuffles in the lineup. And this Vegas team is pretty set. You got, you know, a lot more size, maybe a little bit more grit on this team as compared to Boston. So I'd look for a little bit more of a fight going into this first home game especially if they're not ready for it, Vegas is. So they're going to have to come out hot and quick this first home game.
So, Ryan, was that 7-2 score indicative of how the game actually was played, or was it closer in your mind than the 7-2 score suggested?
I felt that game more or less should have been more of a 5-1 game. You had that that first goal was kind of tough off Martinez. But, I mean, you can't really count that one. Wrong spot at the wrong time. So you can't put that on Hill. And a couple of those goals that Vegas had were a little fluky. Again, Bobrovsky, I think, got a little bit rattled after that second shot went in past him. So, once you get into someone like that's head, I mean, you kind of own them. So they did the right thing in getting him out as quickly as they could have in that situation.
Ryan joined us on the Going Old School show to talk a little Stanley Cup Finals on blogtalkradio.com Wednesday, June 7th, about 7:31 p.m. Eastern Time live on Blog Talk Radio. Ryan, looked like Florida tried to come out in game one and establish their physicality. They were able to do it in the series pass, but maybe met their match here. Do you think that backfired a little bit, and how do they go about establishing? Do they go back to that well? Do they drink that water again, hoping that maybe the second time around they'll have success?
I'm not seeing the physicality really change anything for this team. They've been physical. You've seen Tkachuk get, 36 minutes worth of penalties the other night, game misconducts, and, lots of big hits going on. Lots of pushing around the net. Everyone's very quick on the puck, so I think that that physicality game that Florida's been kind of known for this past postseason, it's just not really working against Vegas. So they're going to have to kind of get back together and go right back to your roots and getting better exits and entries into the zone, clean up their passing a bit, and just get more chances in front of the net. They're not putting it there on their opportunities. They're just kind of holding on and looking for that perfect shot. And you've seen Vegas now. They're just throwing it on net, and they're just making it through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ryan, talk to me about Jack Eichel. Not only, I kind of compare him to what we're seeing with the Joker, Nikola Jokic in Denver, where, sure, he can score. He's got the 6 goals, but it's more impressive when he's, serving it up, 12 assists in these playoffs. To his teammates getting Marcus Salt involved and his teammates involved. But how impressive it is he came back from the hard hit in game two, but just how consistent he has been during this dominant run by Vegas this year.
It is unreal to see Eichel, and I'm so happy to see him succeed in his first playoff appearance. He's been everything that he kind of hyped himself up to be. I think this is just a huge loss for Buffalo, letting him go and not letting him get that surgery. But, talk about dedication and a guy who's ready to come out as soon as the bell has rung. Comes out, a minute and a half into the third period and gets a primary assist on a beautiful goal to Marchessault. Talk about a playmaker who's gonna be the huge impact and hopefully be Vegas Golden Knights taking this series.
Well, Ryan, your opinion here, we had this coach for the Vegas team in Boston, but he was run out of town because he was too mean and too harsh on the players. So what's the difference between this Vegas team that he's run into the finals with compared to the Boston team that he had that didn't like his brash outtake on his players?
I think a lot of it is how the team perceives him in their mindset going in. And you hear a lot of the misfits, the golden misfits. And I think that whole mentality of, all right, this guy's coming in, he's our coach, we're going to listen to what he has to say, he's proven his point, we've been to the Cup, we went 6 years ago, didn't pan out in our favor. This guy, he's been a couple times, hasn't panned out in his favor, let's work together. Let's figure this out. And I think that, his voice has resonated in that locker room. They really haven't had a coach as blunt as Cassidy is. So I think that maybe that is something that they needed in that locker room, was a little bit more of that push, a little bit more grit to their coach than they've experienced in the past.
Brian, Adin Hill has been historic in net for the Knights. And, you know, he'll mix it up, it seems, if he have to. I love his attitude. I love his demeanor. I loved his demonstrative play throughout the games. And I want to ask you, you know, teams feed off of players. And a goalie can sit there and make all the saves he wants, and that's great. They feed off of that. But can a team feed off his attitude? Because he just I can only imagine what's being said. Can the Las Vegas players feed off of their goaltender just by his demeanor on the ice?
Oh, I think so. I mean, if you watch this guy when he's in a lot of traffic in front of him, he's still calm. He makes the movements he needs to make. He never seems like he's going to get rattled. He lets one go by him. We're on to the next one. I think that calm demeanor, that reservation that he has really shows to the team, all right, this guy is comfortable. He knows that we're in front of him. He has to knock. So why shouldn't we have confidence in ourselves? So I think that will definitely have a factor going forward if he can continue to do exactly what he's done these past two games, which is stand on his head for them.
Ryan, Bruins Nation obviously thought this would be a place, a series, that they would be still playing around, playing for Stanley Cup Final against Vegas instead of the Panthers who beat them back in round one. What's at the top of your wish list for the Boston Bruins in order for them to get back into a position to compete for a cup next year?
I think first and foremost is figure out who you want to keep on this team and who we're going to move as an asset. And for me, I think Bertuzzi is a must to come back. If they want another chance to get to where they were and they need a playmaker, I say you go to Bertuzzi. He's very, very much like Taylor Hall in his early days and still now. He's very quick. He's physical. He can finesse the puck. He makes great plays. And, you know, as Taylor gets older, you're definitely going to need someone a little bit younger, maybe a little bit more nuanced in the game, and I think that's exactly what Bertuzzi's bringing to this team.
So, Ryan, you know, we lose to Florida. Florida last year was the President's Cup. They won the President's Cup, got bounced in the playoffs, a.k.a. the Bruins this year, bounced in the playoffs. So, can the Bruins take any solace of the fact that the team that got bounced them made it to the finals a year after winning the President's Cup? So it's like, I know it's a disappointment, but do they still have a chance with this core to make a solid run next year? I know they've got to make some pieces, keep some pieces, make the salary cap work, but does this team have a shot being able to make a run, or do they need to make a rebuild year?
I think that they can continue to do what they did last year and learn from it. I mean, you got to talk a little bit more about load management coming in now. If we're keeping these guys, maybe these last 2 weeks of the season, they don't see as much ice time, or they do play every game, but they're only playing, you know, 15, 14 minutes as opposed to 22, you know, just giving them a little bit of a rest going in. That way we're ensuring that they're healthy, they're ready to go, but they're still, you know, out there and in game form.
Ryan, three names I want to give you. I want to see, are these guys going to be back with the Bruins next season? Taylor Hall, Jake DeBrusque, and Patrice Bergeron.
I mean, going off of what I've been seeing from Patrice Bergeron, he's making it seem more like this is kind of the end for him, in which case, you know, it's been an awesome run. But a guy you'd like to see come back for one more, especially with the team that they have now around him. And DeBrusque is another piece you'd love to keep, but at the pace that he's been producing, if it's worth it to shop him around and maybe get someone like a younger prospect who plays a similar style, who you could throw up on a top line or on a second line with Pastrnak, I say that is also beneficial. But again, it's Jake DeBrusque, and I think with the coaching change, he wants to stay here. So. Mm-hmm. That's definitely a huge bonus for us. And I'm sorry, what was the last one?
Taylor Hall.
He's another tough one. You want to see him stay around. He was happy to be here. He has been a huge impact for us. He was very helpful in playoffs when he was there. But I think maybe that's one piece I'm okay with moving away from if we're going to benefit or, you know, kind of package him together in a deal with some other prospects and get in, you know, a couple good picks and or you know, a nice prospect from another team.
Ryan, is Hampus Lindholm somebody you would try to keep, salvage, or put out there and try to move along to get another piece or to get some cap room?
I think Lindholm is another piece, kind of a staple on that back end now. He is younger. He's around 27. Fits in very well with McAvoy. He's a big body. He does generate a lot of offensive chances, and I think the Bruins were lacking that a little bit in the past couple of years. So he definitely opened up that that big open ice stretch passing, you know, offensive defenseman type play.
Ryan, my question to you is, you know, you look at Tkachuk, and he's being physical, he's going out there, but is it time for him to kind of rein in a little bit of that physicality and play more of a hockey game to keep himself on the ice, keep himself out of the penalty box, because he's doing more harm to the Panthers than good being in the penalty box? So he's like a Martian. It's like, you know, you want the physicality, but he kind of looks like he might need to rein in just a hair bit going forward for the Panthers to have a shot in Game 3.
For sure. I mean, you definitely have a lot of big physical guys on that team, and Tkachuk's one of those, seems like the type of player who once he's got, you know, I'm going to go out there and just start running into people, you're not going to get that out of his head. He's like a rabid animal running into everybody. He is skating up and down the ice in your face. And he's producing, which is, you know, like the insult to injury. He's getting goals. He's getting important goals and assists. So I think he needs to, you know, step back a little bit from being so physical, reserve a little of that energy, and look around the ice, see where plays can develop, and be that player that he's been in those key situations late in games, the game-winning goals, the game-tying goals. We need to see more of that out of him if they want to have a chance of, you know, making it out of the first four games of the series.
Brian, final question. Thanks for the time. Your thoughts on Cole Caulfield with a nice 8-year, $63 million extension with rival Montreal?
Oh, that's a big pickup for them. It's a kid who's going to grow. He's, you know, a lot of talks putting him in the mix with Connor McDavid. He's only been in the league a few years, but I mean, if you watch this guy, this kid play, he's unreal. He's quick, and he's going to be that next Montreal face that franchise really needs to kind of press hockey up in Montreal and bring the fans back in.
And Ryan, he's second only to Jack Hughes in goals out of all the players drafted in 2019, so that's pretty impressive.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if we're talking just about that draft, those are definitely the two biggest names that came out of there. And look what they've done for both of those teams. They had a short little COVID Cup run there with Caulfield, and due to injury this year, he wasn't as healthy as they needed him to be. So, I mean, get this guy healthy and look out for this team next year.
Ryan, as always, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to game three tomorrow night, man. I'll talk to you before then, but appreciate it. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Absolutely. Thank you guys very much.
Thanks, Ryan.
Always a
That's
pleasure.
Ryan. Thanks, Ryan. That's Ryan DeResta, our old school insider on the Going Old School show on blogtalkradio.com. Interesting. Big Vegas fan, though. You'd be surprised that we talk about off the air. But Ryan, see, I'm telling you guys, this guy, he sleeps and drinks hockey. I'm telling you. So I enjoy having him on the show. Look forward to speaking with him more. But it's been a rocking 45 minutes so far. And Going Old School
Show.
We're
not even done yet.
Nope. We got to do some NBA. So it's the Going Old School Show, live on blogtalkradio.com. John Crow, Joe Parent, yours truly, Johnny Sunkits. And let's welcome in one of the guests on our show. But he's our NBA guy. And my NBA guy. He's my guy, Mr. Mark Fortney, to talk NBA Finals. Mark, you've heard the cast. Thanks for your time, buddy. How are you? Mark.
Bro.
There you are.
What's up, Mark?
Hey, guys. What's up, guys? Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good, man. I know you got a hole kind of getting a little insights, getting a little feel for
I'm
it.
I'm getting a bunch of insights. Fantastic. Ryan is the quintessential NHL mind. He's schooled me far more than ESPN ever could.
You know
and
what? And
you
I
got to
go ahead.
You got to hear all Jarvis quip that we hear every time we talk to him.
No, right. Ryan eats, sleeps, and drinks hockey, and he's educating me every day. So that's why we have him on the show. But, Mark, you do the same with the NBA for me. I love your intake. I love your input. I love your mind when it comes to the NBA. And you and I chatted the other day. This is game three tonight, okay? And here's my thought. This is my first thought. And it's kind of – if you're the Miami Heat, put it this way, Mark. When they win, it's because of the other team not playing well. When Miami loses, it's about because the other team played better than them. Miami has no input in any way, shape, or form on how the games are decided. And I'm telling you right now, I don't know Spoelstra, but that team, Mark, is feeding off of this. I granted they were an 8 seed. They beat a 1 seed. They beat a 4 seed, and they beat a 2 seed. So they're not an 8 seed anymore. I can't believe the disrespect now that they're in the NBA Finals. Because of who they are. I can't imagine them not feeding into the site, Mark.
Oh, the momentum is clearly in their favor. And to be honest with you guys, I have Miami winning tonight, seeing as though the Miami Heat totally and completely frustrated the former MVP Nikola Jokic and the rest of the Denver Nuggets in game two. Denver exploded out to a 15-point lead, and when Miami's resiliency took over, you started to see Nikola Jokic try to kick it into seventh, eighth gear, if there even is such a gear, and that displays frustration. It's obviously key that he can't be doing all the scoring. His triple-doubles are pretty much what helps Denver along. He needs to distribute at least 10 assists in order for Denver to win. However, too, the frustration carried over to other players like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Aaron Gordon's shooting frustration has started to mount. Miami is beyond, as I call them, Riley's resilient renegades. They don't stop. They are the Energizer Bunny of the NBA. No matter what the lead is, no matter what the deficit is, they are going to keep coming at you with multiple levels of depth. You have shooters. You have Gabe Vincent. You have Duncan Robinson. You have Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo as your pillars of the team. And then you got guys coming off the bench, Kevin Love, you got Cody Zeller, and, of course, you got your management, Eric Spoelstra, you got Pat Riley. I got Miami winning this game tonight solely based on momentum and based on the principles that they've brought to the table in this playoff.
I tend to agree with you, Mark. I like Miami tonight, but there is more pressure on them tonight to continue this and go back home. They haven't played at home in 10 days. You know, since they lost that game 6 to the Celtics and, you know, 0.1 seconds left for Derek Effin White. But look at what Denver did, you know. And I go back to Chips's point, you know. Miami doesn't get the credit because Miami is just that Energizer Bunny that just continues to go at you and at you and at you in waves. And I know Celtics fans would like to look at what happened the other night in Game 2 to Denver and say, well, Denver just lacked intensity and their defensive effort wasn't there, just like it wasn't there for the Celtics. But there was a reason why. Talk to me about the decision that Eric Spoelstra made about Jokic, of Nikola Jokic. You can decide. You want to make him eat or you want to make him serve? He can't do both. It's what you did in game one. But his decision to just say, yo, Joker, go ahead and eat me all day, but I'm not letting you serve the rest of the meal for the Denver Nuggets.
Now, it's funny you say that, Crow, because I noticed that the rest of the team couldn't really follow suit. There was nobody to pass the ball to, and the only person for me who really seemed to show up for them, and it was kind of a nice spark off the non-existent bench, if you will, of Denver, and it was Christian Braun. He seemed to be the only one who was fundamentally sound, who could actually tell everybody, hey, let's slow this thing down. These guys are going a little too fast for us. But Miami put Jokic right in their back pocket. I mean, he couldn't distribute the ball, and you could see the frustrations. He'd be trying to go at Bam Adebayo 200%. It was almost like he was trying to be Shaq. He was trying to put the ball through the hole every single time up the court just to get his team back within contention in order to win the game. That if Miami keeps playing that kind of ball, they're going to win the championship. they're going to frustrate Jokic, and Jokic is the example that Denver follows. He is their guy. He is the Giannis of their team. Denver is on a run this year similar to what Milwaukee was when they won the championship a few years back. He's carrying the team on their back. If he can't, like I said, if he can't have his triple doubles, if he can't have his assists, this is the same thing as Steve Nash in his back-to-back MVP years in Phoenix. Give Jokic his 40, his 50, his 60, whatever points. If you take away everybody else, Denver isn't even a factor.
Mm-hmm. So doesn't it amaze you that NBA teams can't play against a zone defense? It's like Miami goes into a zone defense, and these teams forget how to play basketball. They forget how to find the open man, and they can't hit their shots because they can't distribute the basketball. It just seems like Miami has the more determination. They have determination to win this thing than Denver does. And look, it's not that Miami doesn't get the credit. Denver has better players. Miami just has more determined players.
No, they do. They clearly have more heart. They have more depth. They have more drive. And not to say that Denver doesn't have any of that, but Miami's a clear ball of energy, and there really is no alpha on the team. You can't really go and say Jimmy Butler is the alpha because he's pretty much just like everybody else on the team. Let me just go out, do my part, do what I need to do. Yes, I'm the top build guy on the team, but I'm not going to play that way because that's the type of basketball that my coach instills in me, the type of basketball that the GM has instilled in Pat Riley. I mean, there's a reason why Pat Riley is accountable for 25% of the NBA finals in history, because it's team basketball. It's a team-oriented game. I mean, this is almost similar to the Lakers of the 80s. I mean, granted, you had your studs and everything, but they still played as a team, and that's what this team does. There's no alpha. Everybody is the alpha. Everybody is the I in team. It's when everybody stands up and says I, and they all do it. I mean, shooting the threes, distributing the ball down low, coming up with clutch shots, clutch free throws, clutch defense at that. I mean, you've got a slew of undrafted guys doing this. You've got veterans doing this. You've got mid-career guys doing this. That's what's making Miami over and above more successful at this juncture of the series than Denver.
Chips Crow and Joe here for you with Mark Forney to talk some NBA Finals at Game 3 tonight about 8:30 from Sunrise, Florida. Mark, Mike Malone in his post-game comments yesterday ripping into his team, I get it, but what you saw on the court, and we talked about Miami having some say in how Denver didn't play well, so to speak, but was that Malone showing a little bravado, trying to fire up his team in front of the media? Because that's how I saw it, Mark, because you know, I don't think Denver just lied down and died and just didn't play with enthusiasm. We talked about Miami on the other side, but your thoughts on Malone, and is that something that you agree with him firing up his team?
I think, Chips, this is something that is a good tool for Denver to fire them up. Problem is they can't get too fired up. They can't, like, for example, with Jokic losing control of himself in Game 2 to try and score every single time up the court at a million miles an hour. He's trying to get these guys to say, hey, look, these guys are gas pedal offense all day long, and we've got to step our game up several notches in order to stop that. We can't take our foot off the gas. We have to do everything, both sides of the floor, better than they do, despite the fact that they're not going to stop. This is far different from the three times that Mike Malone called his team out at the end of the season when he said that they were soft, that they weren't doing anything defensively. This is more of a, hey, we're dealing with a top-caliber team despite the fact that there's an 8 next to them when you see them on the scoreboard. And we really have to handle them as if they've won 5 championships in a row. And they're really, as I've said before, there is no alpha on this team. They're just a bunch of, classy, gritty players who continue to play the game. And hopefully, for Denver's sake, they can take this message and make this a series. Otherwise, Miami's going to run them over in at least 2 out of 3 in Miami, and this series could be over before we even know it.
Now, Mark, we know what we're going to get from the Heat role guys, Robinson and, you know, Lowry and Strus and Vincent. You know, they have a rough patch. They just keep on going. On the other side, Caldwell Pope. I mean, he's a guy who obviously offensively didn't have it the other day. But what worried me more was the 3 awful fouls, 2 on 3-point shots that he surrendered during that game. Just means mentally, effort-wise, he wasn't focused. And as Mike Malone said, this is the NBA Finals. If you're not going to be locked in now, you know, when are you ever going to be? Are you confident in guys like Caldwell Pope, like Porter Jr., that they can get that back tonight?
I think you could get that type of confidence, although if there's one move that I think Mike Malone could make that could really shake things up a bit for Denver going against Miami, one guy who stood out for me and showed real composure throughout all of Game 2 was Christian Braun. Every single play, he was playing as though he had a Miami Heat jersey on. There was a loose ball, he went to go get it. There was a teammate on his wing, he passed it to him. Whereas Caldwell Pope with his fouls, you could not only see the frustration in the foul, but even when the whistle blew, he totally lost his composure, and it carried on over to every other play. I think what Malone could do is he could actually incorporate a couple more bench guys, Braun, Jeff Green. Jeff Green even played a key part off the bench for them. Bruce Brown is a good source of energy for them. You can't let the frustration get to you. You got guys off the bench who are fresh legs, who can actually switch things up a little bit, and maybe even from a cerebral standpoint, slow down Miami. Just at least try to get up on them defensively. Show a little fundamentals. You could see that with Braun particularly on his defense.
So not to switch gears of that final. So Celtics have been saying, though, would you trade Jaylen Brown for Damian Lillard up straight?
Oh, never. Absolutely never. I mean, Lillard is a very talented basketball player, don't get me wrong, but after seeing the last 2 extensions that he signed in Portland, who knows what kind of dollars he's going to command. I mean, he came off of a 4-year, $196 million extension, and then a 2-year, $122 million extension. And in the meantime, you've actually watched a very historical franchise in Portland totally dissipate. When I was younger, I was big into the Jailblazers, and I followed Portland from then up until now.
Yeah.
And I've watched good guys go. I watched guys like C.J. McCollum just file right out of Portland because the shackles of Damian Lillard pushed him out the door. Not to say that he's a cancer, but he's a guy who wants to be the alpha a little too much to the point where it kind of gets to his head. I think what Boston would need more so is second-tier guys, maybe guys who could start, who could come off the bench. I talked with Chips a few days back. I think Sacramento would be a good trade partner for Boston if they were to send somebody over there. I like Malik Monk off the bench. I actually wanted Sabonis before the year started. They have guys on their team. They kind of play like Miami. They keep the game going. And there's really nobody who wants to be the alpha. They just want to play basketball. And in my mind, I'm not so sure that Damian Lillard would be.
Mark Forney joined us here to talk some NBA basketball. Mark, we referenced a few days ago. I'm going to reference that again. The Denver Nuggets have lost 4 games in this playoff. In those 4 games, Nikola Jokic has averaged 41 points. So the chess match. You talked, JC, you talked about Miami letting Jokic eat. But if you're Denver, you want to keep that total down, which means I think you need to see a lot of Jamal Murray, a lot of Michael Porter Jr. My point is, I think if Denver is to win this game, Jokic can't have that high point total. Your thoughts on that?
No, he certainly can't. This is actually a game where, not just by way of playing, but also vocally, where Jamal Murray needs to step in and say, hey, look, I'm Robin to you, Batman. I think we need to actually have a balanced attack in order to help us win a game to move on in this series and take the lead. Jamal Murray is a very explosive player, and he himself can take games over just the same. I think what needs to happen is Jokic needs to distribute the ball a little more, and I would say let Jamal Murray run the show offensively from a scoring standpoint. If that's going to change up Miami's D, change up their approach, I'd say go with it. He's a very explosive player. He's very hard to contain. And also, too, Jokic has all these other guys around him. He's got Aaron Gordon, who's a very polished player since his Orlando days. You've got Porter. You've got Caldwell Pope. If the passing of the ball is there, if Jokic's scoring numbers are down, his passing is up, this could be a good win for Denver. If not, then sure, Jokic can go have his 50 points, and Mike Malone can curse out Denver more so in the media again.
Mark, one of the guys on the Heat that I don't think gets enough credit, and, you know, whether it's just because he's a vet, he makes a lot of money, and he's just kind of, oh, you know, overlooked because of the Robinsons, the Struces, and the Martins that have stepped up in the, you know, throughout this playoff run. It's Kyle Lowry, because it doesn't always show up in the stats with the points and the assists, but just driving the pace with that second unit, regardless of whether you're up 11, down 15, he always knows when to push, when to pull back, when to take that three-point shot, when to take that charge. How important is it for Miami, those minutes that he gives when Butler and Adebayo are in there?
Oh, he's beyond important, Crow. I'm telling you, when he played in Toronto, he used to make me cringe all the time. And everybody would say, little puffy Lowry, a little fat guy running the court. The man would make every single shot. Every time I looked up, he was making a shot. And I used to say, how is it this guy signs a one-year, $31 million deal in Toronto? How is he even worth $31 million? Well, that is quite an excessive figure. However, like you stated, he is beyond important coming off the bench. He provides a similar spark to the bench that Jimmy Butler provides to the starters. It's the same kind of energy fusing throughout the team. It's Eric Spoelstra's coaching. It's Pat Riley's management. It echoes throughout every member of the team, and Kyle Lowry exemplifies this 100%.
Mark, just let me follow up real quick. Kyle Lowry, if he's on the Celtics on a second unit, and I know we love Malcolm Brogdon, but if Kyle Lowry was that guy in Boston, are we talking about the Celtics and the Nuggets here?
That's a very distinct possibility. I mean, he has that Eddie House presence, that guy who can come off the bench and provide the spark, get the crowd going. There's a very distinct possibility, Crow, that we could be talking about Boston in the finals if Kyle Lowry came off the bench, for sure.
So my final question to you is, how do you see this game going tonight? Who do you got and who do you think stands out tonight?
I think whoever loses this game tonight is going to win game four. I think it's going to be a 2-2 scale. I got Miami tonight. We did bring up earlier how Miami hasn't played at home in a long time, in a 9-day span. Do take into consideration, though, Denver had themselves a 9-day layoff, not playing at all, and they went into game one and won. And I'm feeling that pattern is going to play into tonight. I'm going to take Miami. I'm going to say – I'll say Miami by seven, maybe like a 113, 106.
something along Mark, those lines.
I like that. Mark, final question for me, but I want to keep you on the line as we end the show because you're part of the old school show now. I'm interested, this Miami team, even if they don't win the championship, what I see is that everyone knows about the culture now. And I guess what I'm getting at is if I'm a free agent, like Damian Lillard has come out on a podcast and said Miami's a place he'd want to go. We know South Beach. We know the tracks. We know the area. Players want to go to Miami and play. But having said that, with the culture there, with that winning attitude, and we talked about Spoelstra being maybe the best coach in all the NBA now, if I'm a big free agent and I want a chance to win a title, Miami's a place I consider even more so than just the atmosphere in Miami. Your thoughts?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the blueprint is there. I mean, Riley at the top tier, Spoelstra is the coach. You've got guys who once were studs, like Kevin Love. You've got guys who are average off the bench. You got your Cody Zeller. You got your undrafted guys. You got your Max Strus. You got your Duncan Robinson. Your Gabe Vincent. There's a good blend of talent over there to say, wow, where can I fit in? Mm-hmm. If I want to win a championship, I would do anything and everything to find my way into that. Similar to how a lot of bargain basement guys would try to find their way into the Patriots culture back in the early part of the century. They would do anything and everything to make it work just to get that ring on their finger. Kevin Love is a great example. He doesn't play a lot of minutes, but when he's in there, he does what he needs to do to say, we need to win this ring. I want to win this ring. I want to get back to where I was with Cleveland. And sure, and the fan base there, I mean, that place is absolutely electric. There is a sea of white-hot T-shirts all throughout that arena. That place is obnoxiously loud. And, come on, the greatest temperatures in the entire country. Why wouldn't you want to go there?
All right, guys, do you have any final thoughts? I'm going to start with John, Joe, and Mark. Give us a final thought, and I'll close it out. It's been great. But, yeah, anything you want to get off the chest?
Yeah, final thoughts, and I'll go straight to the story of the last 24 hours, with the PGA Tour and LIV Golf and the PIF, DP World Tour, all getting together, and it's amazing how, 12 to 15 months, how things can change, and that it's one way when someone wants to leave your organization and take money to change your situation, and it's totally different when the company wants to take that same money to change their situation in life because they think it's right. And I know with the PIF, the Saudi money, everyone has their individual look on what it is and what they, because obviously everyone's situation is different and we all know what information was out there with 9/11 and Al-Qaeda and what it is. And I just thought it was interesting today listening to Rory McIlroy, who has been the face of the PGA Tour against LIV Golf. And a 25-minute press conference today, and the overriding issue is that he hates the guys that left. He hates LIV Golf.
Mm-hmm.
Hated the reason they left, hated the money. But now that the PGA Tour can take their money and control the situation, everything's okay, because it's for the good of the game. So, it's an amazing thing, and everyone will have their spin on it. But, Rory McIlroy is a guy I respect a heck of a lot. And, he has been the face out there. And he made it clear today that he was never offered a dollar to go to LIV Golf.
Yep.
So, I don't know how, you talk about reprimands, reparations, I should say. But how guys who stood and stayed need to be, taken care of. I'll be interested to see how the PGA Tour takes care of Rory McIlroy and the likes, because at the end of the day, this was about the PGA Tour taking blood money to save their soul. They were in financial trouble, and they didn't have the financial wherewithal to keep the lawsuits going. That's what this is really about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, let's get together and do for the good of the game. No, the PGA Tour for the first time had competition, and they could, kind of like AEW versus WWE. AEW has money to withstand anything because they got billions of private money. WWE is public. If you have the money, you can stick it out. So it'll be interesting to see because the PGA Tour players now think that LIV Golf is going away. If you hear from the LIV Golf guys, they don't think LIV Golf is going away. They think that's going to be an active part of the golf, whatever it is we're going to see in 2024 and going forward. So very interesting. Very interesting on all fronts to see how people are lining up to what they have done and their lot in life and moving forward. So just when we think we got everything figured out, like Roddy Piper always said, just when you think you have the answer, I change the question.
Thanks, Jason, for leading me up to my final thought. An RIP to sports entertainment history's Iron Sheik, the one who created the baby face called Sergeant Slaughter. Iron Sheik passed away today at 82 years old. Great entertainer, great wrestler in his day, old school wrestler, no pun intended, but that's where Sergeant Slaughter was created by a good old Iranian flag of Mr. Iron Sheik. Rest in peace, buddy.
Go ahead, Mark.
Here on June 7th, 2023, currently as we see it, the Miami Marlins are up 6-1 on the Kansas City Royals, and Miami Marlins second baseman Luis Arraez is currently up to a batting average of .403.
Love it.
How ridiculous is that? How ridiculous is it that the Minnesota Twins decided to peddle the American League batting champion for Carlos Correa to give Carlos Correa a second, third, 12th, 18th chance at life with millions of dollars, and meanwhile, this guy is off shattering batting averages in Miami. He went into today batting at .401. He's 2-for-4 tonight. He's batting .403. Ted, if you're up in heaven listening and watching, your record might be shattered. Just a word of warning to you.
Hey, Mark, how ironic is it that the Miami Marlins successful after Derek Jeter leaves them?
Even worse, the run production compared to their defense. I mean, if you look at the standings, they've got 248 runs scored to 277 runs against, which means their pitching is doing something right, but their bats are eh. Nonetheless, they're in second place in the National League East.
And Arraez would win his second consecutive batting title. He did so last year with the Twins, Mark. So that's interesting. But I love that. It's great for the game, great history. I'm going to go with baseball because here's my final thought. So a week ago yesterday, I'm at Fenway with my son watching the Cincinnati Reds take on the Boston Red Sox, a game in which the Red Sox lost 9-8, falling short in that great ninth inning comeback. Okay? But, you know, you're taking the festivities. I get up there early. My son likes your autographs. You have a bite to eat. You have a sauce. You have a piece of pizza. You go in the stadium. Fenway Park is beautiful. The big scoreboard, you love it. The aesthetics, awesome. The red seat, I couldn't even find the red seat. So I ended up sitting down, and through the course of the day, and before the, you know, in little internally during the game, they're showing these hype videos. And I'm watching a hype video. Hype video, guys. Who's on the hype video? Yes, you have Rocky Alderis, right? But I'm watching a hype video with Justin Turner, Emmanuel Valdez, Ramiel Tapia, and he's DFA'd, Reese McGuire, Jaron Duran, Kike Hernandez, who made a couple of errors. And I'm saying, what kind of bleeping hype video is this? And I wanted to leave the ballpark. And if I wasn't with my son, I would have, because I realized that this Boston Red Sox team, they have no players that want to bring me out to watch the game. They have no Manny. No David Ortiz. Most recently, Xander's gone. J.D. Martinez. Those guys brought me to the seats. I went to a game to watch these guys perform. And when they were up, I didn't leave the seat. But I couldn't have given a rat's ass about being there that game. I couldn't wait till the game was over. I was standing up saying, okay, Red Sox, can we just go away? You're not winning the game. They kept me there with the 9-8 win. But, guys, I said to myself, I don't care if I go to another game this season. And that's a place I'd love to go because there is no player that I would want to see come to bat and no player that would bring me up. And that's how far this team has fallen. So, been chomping at the bit to get that out. But
by the way, Chips, it's Mr. Emmanuel Valdez. Superstar.
And you know, they're on the screen, the music's playing, and they're pointing at you like the fans, and it was just like, I was like, okay, enough. Just, can you stop it? Done. Anyway. Jesus.
Yoshida needs to bring more than the beer.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, my God. Guys, it's been a great hour and plus. Mark, John, Joe, I look forward to many more conversations with you. Thank you so much for your time on this Wednesday day, and we'll talk to you all really, really soon.
Thank you, boys.
Guys, have a perfect
night, gentlemen.
Guys, have a great night.
Thanks, man. For Joe, for Mark, for John Crowell, this is Johnny Sunjits. And thanks very much to Jarvis Green to talk some football with us. Jenks, thanks very much to Ryan DeResa to join us to talk some NHL Stanley Cup Finals. And we'll talk to you hopefully very, very soon. We'll be back on Wednesday. Welcome, Mark, to the crew officially. Mark, welcome. Glad to have you a part of the Going Old School show. So until next time, people. Take care, stay well, be safe, and we'll talk to you on the other side.